Yes.
Hello. We're just getting started.
Great.
Before we get into tonight's class, we'll do the Anabakoach. Anabakoach Gedula Chemincha Tati Serula Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayim Sintet Mona Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kivavat Shamrein Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kaf Shin. And this is the month of Scorpio, the month of Cheshvan. This is the verse associated with that. So we meditate on the Dalad, which is the letter that created the planet Madim, the planet Mars, and the Nun, which creates the constellation Scorpio. Barchem Tacharem Rakamei Sidkatcha Tami Gamay Chet Kuf Bet Tet Nun Ayin Chasin Kadosh Vero Tucha Nae Adata Het Kuf Bet Tet Nun Ayin Yachid Gea Lamcha Pene Zogre Kedushatach Yud Gimelamed Hey Zion Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmatziakatenu Yodea Tadumot Shinkufav Tadiyutav. And the last line is said silently. I'm going to say it out loud just for practice so you can hear it. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Leolam Vayet. Before we get started, Hilda, you said you had a question you wanted to talk about? Yes. Okay. Okay, the question is about the positive and negative energy in the last two pages of the second class handout. The idea, and actually I can start bringing in the handout from this week, which is titled The Big Bang and the Tzimtzum. And in our last class, which was a couple of weeks ago, but for those of you on the recording, it might be just yesterday. In our last class, we mentioned the Tzimtzum and how it was essentially the Big Bang, what modern physicists call the Big Bang. What we're dealing with, a concept of creation. We're dealing in a place which is not really physical. It exists everywhere. It's called the endless world because there is no limitation in that world. The creation of the endless world comes from the Creator. We cannot even know the Creator. We can't even name the Creator. All we can put a name to is the extension of the Creator called Creator. That extension essentially had a desire. It's not a desire because within God, within the light, there is no desire. But we don't even have a word for describing. The extension, the Creator wants to be revealed. Spiritual things can't be seen. They can't be measured. They can't be touched. They aren't real in a physical sense. They're not even real in a spiritual sense. Because without clothing, without a covering, without some way of seeing the essence of something, we cannot connect to that. In the endless world, the Creator wants to be revealed. And again, I stress, it's not a desire. But we have no word that really can describe it. The Creator wants to be revealed, and so automatically, as the effect of that cause, there was a vessel that was created. That vessel is every physical atom. That vessel is us. That vessel is all of the physical world in all different aspects. The Creator wants to be revealed in all of its aspects, in its love, in its desire for nourishment, its desire for pleasure, its fulfillment. The only way it can be revealed is to be fulfilling a vessel. That the definition of positive and negative is the Creator we call light. That's a cause. That's positive. The vessel, which is us, we call negative. Now, relative to our physical world, relative to us, there is a male, which is called positive, and a female, which is called negative. It isn't negative in the bad sense. It's just a description that means receiver. Positive means sharing. Receiving means receiving. The endless world consisted of these two aspects. Positive was sharing, the light. Negative was receiving, the vessel. Together, we don't understand in a spiritual world, in a spiritual sense, the only way that two opposites can come together is by being the same. Light, sharing and receiving are definitely opposite of each other. The only way they can be together, to be in unity, we cannot understand. Spiritually, they're opposites. So how can they be in unity? And yet, we have this paradox that says the endless world, the light and the vessel was in unity. So they were in unity, but we don't understand how they could be in unity. They just were. And because they were in unity, the vessel was constantly getting fulfilled. The desire, before it even had a chance to come to the mind of the vessel, for fulfillment, for food, for pleasure, for sex, for swimming, whatever, taking a shower, whatever gives you pleasure, before it could come to the mind of the vessel, it was fulfilled. And this led to a feeling within the vessel in the endless world, in the end soul, a feeling called bread of shame. Bread of shame is essentially a feeling that I didn't earn what I received. We don't really truly understand bread of shame. We have metaphors explaining it, as I said in the previous class. If I take you out to lunch every day, eventually you want to buy me lunch to reciprocate. Even if I've got $1 million and you're destitute, you still want to try to reciprocate in some way. People don't like to be beholding to other people. People don't like to receive from someone else because they feel they haven't earned. If somebody has earned it, no problem. If I'm working for a living and I get the paycheck, I've earned it. I have no problem receiving that. But to stick my hand out to somebody and say, please give me $1, that's uncomfortable. The person giving the dollar is got no problem. What's the effort? He gives the dollar. But the person receiving it has a feeling of being less than, of uncomfortableness. That bread of shame, that feeling, caused the vessel to say to the light, I don't want to receive unless I've earned it. And when that earning, when that statement has come to the vessel, when the vessel said to the light, I would rather die than receive from you, the light did what we recall a tsimtsum, a contraction. The light is everywhere. We can't see it right now, but it's everywhere. It's right here. It's in me. It's out of me. It's in you. It's out of you. It is everywhere. But the light contracted. And we don't even understand how that could happen. The light created a space where the world could exist. That's what the tsimtsum is, an empty space where there is no light, and yet there is light that we can't see. Because there cannot be any place or space that doesn't have the light. The vessel is dead without the fulfillment of the light. This is the paradox of the tsimtsum. How can the light not be here? And yet it's clearly not here. Another paradox that we come to deal with. Once that space was created, then the light came back into that space, but not in the same way. It came back in what's called a line. It started to come around, it started to fill the space, but it filled it in a way that made it less than the endless world. There's a limitation by virtue of having been through the tsimtsum. I that literally is what this third handout is from this week, is describing the tsimtsum in more detail. The positive and the negative is the light and the vessel, the cause and effect. Everything in our world, in the language of the Kabbalists, in the language of branches, deals with cause and effect. Cause is never physical. I went to work, and I did physical work, and I got paid a physical salary. That's not what took place. I received money not because I worked, but because the person who's paying me for that work received that money from the light, received that energy from the light, and is passing it to me. In our physical world, we see cause and effect as you do an action and you get it back. But in the true world, the cause is always spiritual, and that is a spiritual law. The cause is always spiritual. If someone were to steal in a truly clear cause and effect world, somebody were to steal, their hand would fall off. It doesn't happen in our world because of time. Time is a creation, just like you and I. Time is part of the vessel. It's an effect. It's a gift. It's part of the process. And we'll learn more about it over the classes. Did I answer your question, or have I confused you completely?
Okay.
As we go through the classes, this last week's lecture and just what I just started talking about is literally a lifetime study to understand how the light comes from the endless world into our physical world and how cause and effect works. The essence of that process of cause and effect is through what we call the 10 sephirot, and that's a lifetime study. And you can't, in a beginning class, cannot be in more detail than that. Okay. Part of what was in the endless world, part of the creation, is, let me start this a little differently. The Torah says that God said there was light, and there was light. It's one of the first verses of the Torah. God said that there was the waters above and the waters below would separate by the firmament. And it was so. God said the waters below will separate and reveal the land. And it was so. Each step of creation, the 7 days of creation, is coming about through words. Words are made up of letters. Truly, words are made up of sounds. They're made up of the sound of a consonant and the sound of a vowel. And this is true in every human language ever revealed, ever spoken. But in the Torah, we have a story about the Tower of Babel. And in that story, it says that all of the people who lived in this valley of Shinar spoke one language. And the Zohar comes and explains that the gematria, the numerical value of the term one language, is equal to the term holy language. Now, if you go ask any person who lives in this world today, whether they're secular, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Christian, whether they're Jewish, what's the holy language? The majority of people, to a significant percentage, would answer the holy language is Hebrew. What the Zohar explains to us is that God spoke Hebrew sounds, in the Hebrew letters. He gave us the Torah 2,400 years later with Hebrew letters, the holy language. We speak English on this class. Many of you speak different languages. What's the difference between Hebrew and all of these other languages? And the difference is that Hebrew is holy. Hebrew is the language that God speaks, that He uses to create with. That's the difference between speaking Hebrew and speaking English, or speaking Spanish, or speaking Swahili. We, after the Tower of Babel incident, our language was confused. God changed people so they spoke a different language. Yet one of the languages is Hebrew, and it is still spoken today. It went through a period of time of 2,000 years when it wasn't spoken. But even when it was spoken in the time of the temple, the language of the people was not Hebrew. It was Aramaic. Aramaic uses the letters, the Hebrew letter shapes, to spell their words. But Aramaic is not Hebrew. They are similar languages. They're called Semitic languages, just as Arabic is a Semitic language. But they are different. God created using the sounds of the Hebrew language. I can go on and on about each of the 22 letters of the Hebrew language. But the real question of these 22 letters is not their visual shapes, although that's important, and not the vowels, because none of them are vowels. Vowels are done with dots and points. Points above the letter, points below the letter, lines above, lines below, lines to the side. Those are the vowels that people read from a piece of paper or from a scroll, the Torah. But in the Torah, there are no vowels. There's just the letters. And the letters just have sounds. And those sounds manifest depending on how they're approached. Remember, do not believe anything I say. But I'm going to give you some tools today for the first class. This is the first class of my giving you tools. Don't believe a word I say, but try what I suggest. And after a few months, you'll see that it works, or you'll see it doesn't work. That will be your test to prove to yourself. The Hebrew language is unique. God used it to create. The Hebrew language in our physical world is not the same language. God is a spiritual thing. We are physical. When we speak words, they're physical. Can I create exactly the same way that God did? In the physical world, the answer is yes. There are stories told about our sages, the people who are knowledgeable in Kabbalah, how they could create a haunch of meat for Friday night dinner because they were too poor to buy it. they knew how to create it. Why didn't they create the money to go buy it? It's a different question. There are stories in our sages of times when they needed a protection. They would create what is called a golem, which is a human, not a human being, but a form of a man ingested with energy that was used to scare and protect, scare other people and protect the people that created it. The Hebrew letters can create things out of air. It's a science of alchemy. You heard it. It's called a myth to everybody in the modern world. It's not a myth, but for the most part, the knowledge is lost. The knowledge is concealed. The knowledge is not available to us. And I'm not going to teach you how to build a golem. That's not what this class is about. But what I'm trying to express to you is what is the Hebrew language and why I'm going to tell you to do certain things in Hebrew and not in English. Again, I will reiterate, do not believe a word I say. It's up to you to decide to try what I'm going to suggest to you tonight, and then determine for yourself whether it works. I have one student who I've been teaching for a couple of years, and the student learned to scan the Zohar and connect to the Hebrew letters, and then fell away from that practice, and then came back to it. And when she came back to it, she came back to it with a clear understanding, wow, this is amazing. Just by looking at these letters, my life gets less chaotic. These are her words to me. They're my words to myself. They're my words to you. Don't believe our words. Practice it for yourself. The Hebrew letters are considered the DNA of the spiritual world. Everything in the spiritual worlds and in the physical world are created with Hebrew words, with words that use these letters. But the letters are essentially essences of energy. One letter is a letter bet. It represents the energy of blessing. It also represents the energy of house. House can be a blessing, but it can also be not a blessing. If you're married to somebody that's not working out right, then it can be difficult. Every energy is connected to one of the letters. Every energy or every letter has both positive and negative aspects. So you have to be careful with the Hebrew letters, because if you say a word in Hebrew, you can be manifesting negative things. You can be transferring negative things. One of the aspects of the Hebrew letters, and we have a midrash that says, the letters were a plaything of God for 2,000 years before creation. Well, 2,000 years before creation, there was no time. So it's clearly a metaphor. If there's no time, how do I measure 2,000 years? But it's a metaphor. It's explaining that these letters were designed for a purpose. One of those purposes was to transfer metaphysical energy. What is a chair? A chair is made usually from a tree. Where did the tree come from? Well, eventually it came from the seed that grew in the land. But I can trace it all back. The energy of a chair, the essence of a chair, is to provide a place to sit. So the word kiseh, which is the Hebrew word for chair, actually for throne, but it's used also because every human being is a king or a queen, it's used in the same way. The essence of the letters manifest the essence of the energy in our world. The word chair that I say in English, it's not the same thing as if I say kiseh. I'm transferring a different aspect of energy. The word chair has a Hebrew letters. I can transform the word chair into Hebrew letters. I'm transferring a different energy. We have an adage that says, our eyes are the window to our soul. It's a true adage. Don't believe a word I say. But by looking at the shapes of the Hebrew letters, by learning eventually to say the sounds of the Hebrew letters, we will be transferring metaphysical energy to your soul. It happens whether you consciously know it's happening or not, because the letters were created before creation and therefore have an aspect and a level of consciousness higher than creation, so they can impact everything that's created. Knowing how to use that impact, knowing how to connect to that consciousness, is part of the study of Kabbalah. But it's not necessary in order to use the tools of Kabbalah. The Hebrew letters were designed to transfer energy. By looking at the letters, that energy gets transferred. Now, there are three tools I'm going to give you tonight. The first tool is the Torah, the scroll, the Bible. It's been given to you, been given to us, and the tool is to hear it, not to read it, but to hear it. Every Saturday morning in a Jewish synagogue, the scroll is taken out of its ark and it's read in a particular way with ritual. Hashem created this world with cycles, and everything has a cycle. In Kohelet, the book of Kohelet, there are described 28 times. Everything has a time under heaven. There are 28 of them. There's a time to live and a time to, there's a time to be born and there's a time to die. There's a time for peace and a time for war. There are 14 of these opposites. There are 28 times built into the book of Kohelet, built into the cycle. Hashem created a cycle of time called a week. A week is 7 days. The 7 days of creation. 6 days that we work, and the seventh day, the Shabbat, that we rest. Hashem created a cycle that is a two-week cycle. The metaphysical energy that comes in 1 week is called the potential. The metaphysical energy that comes in the second week is called the actual. Cause and effect. Hashem created these cycles and created these portions in the Torah that we read every Saturday morning in Hebrew to give us, to transfer the energy of protection that we need when the portion of potential, the energy of potential, starts to manifest in the next week. What does this mean? It means I'm suggesting that you not convert to being Jewish. I am not suggesting that you become something that you're not. I'm suggesting you find a place, a Jewish synagogue, where you can go and feel comfortable, feel warm, feel welcome, to listen to the Torah every Saturday morning, or once in a while, whatever works for you. But know that the energy that you receive by hearing the Torah reading is going to help you in the coming week. It's giving you the metaphysical energy that you need to handle the energy in the cosmos the coming week. This Saturday, we are talking about the portion of Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah. This week, from last Saturday night till this Friday night, that energy is in potential available to us. That's why we can study it. By hearing it Saturday morning, we are receiving the energy we need on the Shabbat to handle the actual metaphysical energy in the cosmos next week. And this is true week after week. So the first tool I'm handing you is to hear the Torah in the Hebrew. No, you don't understand it. No, you. Yes, there are English translations or Spanish translations or whatever language. It's been translated into every language. But the energy is in the Hebrew letters, in the sounds of the Hebrew letters. Go and hear the Torah and see what happens next week. See what happens if you do it week after week. Test it. Kabbalah is an experiential. It's not intellectual. It works. Why does it work? There are reasons and there is logic, etc. But you must try it. You must choose to make this. What if I only go once a year? So you only go once a year. The tool is there to help you. Whether you choose to do it or not, you're being given the information. Whether you choose to change and make that part of your lifestyle, that's up to you. The second tool is the Zohar. The Zohar is called a commentary on the Torah, a commentary on the scroll. It's much more than that. It's actually referred to as a blessing. Just to have the Zohar in your home, in its original Aramaic, is called a blessing by the sages, by the rabbis. The Zohar is written in Aramaic. What I read this earlier tonight was a verse in Aramaic, which I then read the English translation. The Zohar has been translated into Hebrew and into English. I'm not aware of it being translated into other language, although I know that's coming. There is some Spanish, but it's not yet complete. Again, it's the Aramaic language is composed of Hebrew letters. The essence of the Torah, the soul of the Torah, is revealed in the stories of the Zohar. Don't believe a word I say, but try it for yourself. The second tool I'm talking to you about is for $15 or less. You can buy a very small book of Zohar. It's not a complete book, but it has the Aramaic letters of one of the portions, and that energy will work week in and week out. Experiment for yourself. If you're interested in where to go, it's at Kabbalah.com. And you, for $15 or less, you can get what's called a Pinchas Zohar and have it available to you. I'm suggesting that you do it. But again, don't believe a word I say. Do this for yourself. And the third tool, which I'm handing out a second handout tonight, titled The Anapakoach, is we refer to names of God. A name of God is literally an attribute of God, a tool that God used for a purpose. The Anapakoach is a prayer that conceals within it the 42-letter name that God used to create our physical universe. That name was known. That name is the first 42 letters of the Torah. But it's not direct. You cannot read the first 42 letters and say, that's the Anapakoach. Because the letters are unique and concealed, not because they're concealed, but there are techniques of unifying the letters that allow you to take a letter that's in a word and transform that word into something else, because the letter itself is connected to all of the other letters. The Anapakoach is the 42-letter name of God that was used to make correction, to make creation in our physical world. When we say this prayer, which is 42 letters, words long, the first letter of each word is the 42-letter name. That's why I said earlier, it's concealed in there. But it's really the first letter, so how concealed is it? Because you're not saying it in its proper way. You're not manifesting all of its power. If you manifested all of its power, you would have the energy of the Big Bang. You don't need to manifest all its power to make your life better. The Anapakoach is a third tool I'm giving you tonight. This tool, the handout, has the Anapakoach in a whole bunch of ways, and we're going to go through it step by step so that you can learn it. It is, I've done it, if you look on page 2 and 3, we're going to go through, and actually 4, we're going to go through the 7 verses that make up the Anapakoach. We said it earlier, we sang it earlier. It's what we do at the beginning of each class, because I bring the energy of creation into the class. if you say this once a day, or you say this 1,000 times a day, it's up to you. But saying it while you look at the Hebrew letters, if you know how to read them, say it in the Hebrew and don't worry about the transliteration. But if you don't, transliterate it. Say it in the English, in the transliterated English. But look at the Hebrew letters, because the energy is in the letters. And the first letter of each word is made larger so that you, it'll pop out at you. There are 7 verses in the Anna B'Koach. I'm going to explain connections of the Anna B'Koach. Creation is a bit complex. The Anna B'Koach connects to each day of the week. The Anna B'Koach connects to each month of the year. The Anna B'Koach connects to many different aspects. And you can't learn them all at once. So take it step by step. The first thing is that there are 7 verses, one for each day. There is an 8th verse, which we say silently, that essentially says, if God forbid I brought too much energy for my vessel, I'm going to ground that excess energy. And that's what the silent, softly said verse does. If you look at the beginning of page 2, I'm going to read left to right in English. Months of Tevet and Deli, Sunday Yom Echad, Sefirah Chesed. Everything from that line until the line that says Months of Kislev and Dagim, Monday Yom Sheni, Sefirah Givurah. Everything from that first line to the second line is part of the first verse. It's part of information about the first verse. But the first verse is the large Hebrew letters, and I'm going to, the line below it, directly under the Hebrew words, and the Hebrew words are read right to left. Directly under those words is an English word that isn't English. It's the transliteration of the Hebrew. So reading right to left on the first verse, Ana B'Koach Gedulat Yemincha Tatir Serurah. All of the rest, and then, excuse me, then you see to the left of the Hebrew letters, the Hebrew words, the larger Hebrew letters, smaller ones. And they are the same letters that are the first letters. So you see 6 words, and then putting all of those letters together creates the 7th word, Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadik. When you look at the line, look at the 7 words. When you say the verse, say the 6 words, and look at the 7th word until you reach a point where you learn Hebrew and can say the names of the letters. There are 7 verses. We're going to go through them all right now. Ana B'Koach Gedulat Yemincha Tatir Serurah Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadik. The next line, Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun. The third line, Nagibor Dorshe Yehudecha Kivavat Shamre Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kafshin. The next page will be the 4th line, right at the top. Barchem Tacharem Rachamei Sitkatecha Tamid Gamlein Betet Reish Sari Taf Gimel. The fifth line, Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Na'el Adatecha. Barchem is misprinted there. Chet Kuf Bet Chet Nunayim. The sixth line, Yachid Geye Ramcha Bnei Zogre Kedushatecha. Yud Gimel Lamed Hey Zion Kuf. The next page, page 4, has the seventh line. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Shiakatenu Yodea Ta'alimot Shin Kufav Zadiyutta. And then the last time line is said silently, and I'm going to say it out loud for the purpose of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed. We say these seven lines day by day. So if you're saying it Monday, you're going to connect to the second day of the week. If you're saying it Sunday, you connect to the first day of the week, the first line. So when you say these seven lines, you say them always together, but you stop based on the day of the week. You stop. If it's tonight is Tuesday night, which in the Hebrew calendar is Wednesday, it's the fourth day of the week. We would say the first three verses, one after the other. Then we would say the fourth verse and stop. And go to page 5, where we see the word Wednesday, and then a bunch of Hebrew letters. Those Hebrew letters are connecting us to positive angels, positive energy connected to that day. So we say the three verses, then the fourth verse, and stop and go scan or look at those Hebrew letters. We don't say them ever. We don't call angels. We connect to their energy in their place. We don't bring them into our world. By calling their name, we bring them into our world. So we just scan, and that connects us to their world, their energy, their place, connecting us to positivity so that when we come back into our physical world, we bring that positivity with us. Then you would go back and say the fifth, sixth, and seventh, and eighth lines straightforward. That's how you connect with the days of the week. Now, those same seven verses connect us with the months of the year. The Hebrew months do not follow the Gregorian calendar. We will tell you in these classes when to change. Right now we are in the month of Cheshvan, which means the third verse is where we stop. So the way we do this is say verse 1, verse 2, verse 3. Stop and connect to the letters. The letters are on in those sections back on page 2. But because you don't know the names of the letters and all of the astrological concerns, and you don't need to know, just know that this month, until I tell you to change, connect to the letters Dalet and Nun. Dalet, you'll see if you go back to page 2, you'll see in the third verse, you'll see the Dalet was creating the planet Mars, and the Nun creates the constellation for the month. So we do verses 1, verses 2, verses 3. We stop and look at the Dalet and the Nun. Then we go on to the next verse, number 4, and because it's Wednesday, in the morning, one time only during the day, in the morning only, you connect to the angel of the day. If you forgot to say it in the morning and you didn't connect with the angel, don't worry about it. Then you would say verses 5, 6, and 7. I suggest that eventually you will memorize this. It will become automatic. If you ever need more copies of this, it's available online, or write me an email, you'll be able to get another copy. There are more prettier books put out by the same place, Kabbalah.com, that I sent you for the Zohar. We're going to sing the Ana B'Koach again as part of the training, and then every class we will sing it at the beginning. So see if you can follow along as we start singing. Until you know the tune, or until you're comfortable with it, it's a little overwhelming. Just start with the first verse. Say the first verse. You don't feel that you know where to go or what you're doing, or it feels a little uncomfortable, a little overwhelming, it's fine. Take it step by step, slowly but surely. You'll learn this. It is a very powerful prayer. It is a very powerful tool. The more often you say it, the better. I'm going to tell you a story now. Whether you believe me, you don't believe me, remember, don't believe a word I say. But in the 1990s, there was no 1990s, around, doesn't really matter, 94, 95, 96, I don't remember the exact year, there was secret discussions between the Palestinians and the Israelis about a peace treaty. And eventually it came out as the Oslo Accord. But my teacher, who taught me this, was traveling, and he was in Paris, and he got a message. What kind of message and how it got to him is a separate discussion. My teacher got a message. Go to Algeria. Now, my teacher looks like an observant Orthodox Jewish man. He wears a kippah. He wears tzitzit. Going to Algeria is not a comfortable place today, let alone in the 90s, for a Jewish man. It's an Arab country. They don't particularly like Jewish people right now. My teacher took one of his students who had been born in Algeria, who knew some people from the old days. He took him, the two of them went on a plane to Algeria. My teacher went through customs without any hassle, and you would expect that there would be hassle going through customs, a Jewish man going into an Arab country. Yes, he traveled on a U.S. passport, but still, it's not a comfortable situation. He passed through without any problem. He spent the night, and the next morning, they took a cab. And for those of you who don't know, the Palestinian government in exile has been, and I think still, but then was in Algeria, in a particular building in Algeria. He got into a cab the next morning and said, would you take me to the PLO headquarters? He got out of the cab, and he walked around that building saying the Anabakoa. That's what they told him to do. That's what he sensed he should do. That's what he did. Whenever his diary is published and their minutes of their meetings are published, it will be connected to that his saying the Anabakoa was done at the time that they were voting whether to participate in the Oslo negotiations. That's my belief. Nobody knows for sure. But the result, he did that in a particular month, and 2 months later, the Oslo Accords were published. They were signed. No, they did not work. But the effort was made. The effort to bring peace. And the effort to bring peace will continue. This energy of creation is needed to bring peace. It's needed to bring peace into your life. It's needed to bring a lack of chaos into your life. Say it every day. Say it 100 times a day. Anabekoa Gedula Jemincha Tati Serua Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadik Kaberinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufrei Shayan Sintet Nun. That particular word spells the sequence. That sequence means tear up Satan, tear up the negativity. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamren Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kaf Shin. That particular sequence, Yud Kaf Shin, connects you to taking back the energy from the negative side, taking back the energy you've given to the negative side. The first part of that sequence, Nun Gimel Dalad, connects to the concept of Parnasa. Parnasa is a Hebrew word that means sustenance. It's connecting you to the positive aspect of earning a living, of receiving what you need when you need it. Not too much, but enough to provide all of your needs and fulfillment. This is the third verse. In this month of Cheshvan, we connect to the Dalet, which created the planet Mars, and the Nun, which created the constellation Scorpio. Turn to page 3, the fourth verse. Barchem tacharen rachamei sidkatcha tamigamlem betet resh zarib taf gimel. The fourth verse, if this was morning, since we're in the fourth day, I would stop and go to page 5. But we're in the evening, there's no need to do that. The fifth verse, Chasin Kadosh Birov Tuvcha Nael Adatach Petuf Bet Tet Nunayin Yachid Geel Lamcha Pene Zokre Yudu Shatach Yud Gimel Lamed Hey Zion Kuf. The seventh verse, page 4. Shavatenu Kabel Ushmati Akatenu Yodea Alupot Shinkufav Sadiyutta. The last line is whispered, said silently, Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed. I only say it out loud for teaching purposes. This is the Ana B'Koach. This is the energy of creation. This is one of the powerful tools of Kabbalah that will change your life, that will make you become a happier person, a person with less chaos. How does it work? It works on the spiritual levels. One cannot say, I said the Diana B'Koach today, and this is why I didn't get into an accident. I can say that because I know it's true. If I don't say the Ana B'Koach, will I get into an accident? No, God forbid. But when I do say the Ana B'Koach, the energy of creation, the energy of peace, the energy of serenity comes into my life. If I allow it to stay, I have it all day. If I send it away through my actions, all I have to do is say it again to bring me back into balance. And I do that all the time. Now I'm going to hand out the third handout because I want to explain to you an additional way of seeing the Ana B'Koach. This is the third handout. Rabbi Simon Jacobson put out a series of emails over the summer in which he explained that one of our sages, the Baal Shem Tov, told us that the 42 letters of the Ana B'Koach, the 42 words of the Ana B'Koach, represent the 42 stages that we will go through in our life. And I'll read the first one. The first stage that you went to in your life. Let me step back a second and tell you that in the Jewish Bible, it describes coincidentally 42 stages, 42 places that the Jewish nation traveled in the desert during those 40 years when they didn't go into the land. Why 42? Why is there 42 letters in the Ana B'Koach? It's the energy of creation. There are 42 places that they stopped in the desert. The first one is called Ramses. And that is the first stage of your life. Everybody knows the first stage of your life. It's your birth. There is a connection between the Hebrew word and Ramses, between the concept of coming out of a narrow place, which is the meaning of the word Mitzrayim, meaning Egypt, but it also means a narrow place. Your birth is definitely coming out of a narrow place. Not only does it because you came through the birth canal, which is narrow and constricting, but you came from the spiritual world, which is not narrow. It's totally unlimited. And you came through that birth canal, through that into the physical world, which is what birth represents, a constriction coming out of Egypt. The second journey, let's pick another one. The fourth journey is from Etam to Pi Hacherut, which means they went from the Freedom Valley or the mouth of a river, camping near Migdal. This is where the Jewish people became free. In our lifetimes, it's part of that maturation process. So when do you become free? When you're able to leave your parents' home. 42 stages in each of our lives. I'm not going to read all of these tonight. I suggest you do. I found it very helpful. But I want you to understand that everything that it comes out of Kabbalah has many different meanings. There is not just one aspect. And what you do with the 42-letter name of by saying the Anabakoah is different than what I do. Because Kabbalah is experienced. What you do is for yourself. To prove to yourself what you need to prove. Don't believe a word I say, but please say the Anabakoah at least once a day for the next 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, look back on these 6 months and see if it works for you. Please. Find a place where you can have a Zohar. You don't have the $15? Make a place once a week that has a Zohar in the library. Go and read it. Use the tool. Go and hear the Torah every Saturday morning. Again, it's part of the energy. It's part of the tools available to you using the power of the Hebrew letters. Don't believe a word I say, but please test the tools for yourself. That's the class. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead. What's the question? You're breaking up. Can you speak directly into the phone and take it off speaker, please?
Okay, the question is, if I cannot make it to the synagogue for Shabbat, and I read Torah out loud in the Hebrew. Is that the same energy as if I heard the rabbi speaking it? My voice, my own voice in my ear.
It's going to be less powerful than if you heard it at the synagogue. Mm-hmm. And if you read it as opposed to chant it, because you don't know the chanting, the trope, it's less energy, but it's better than not doing it at all.
Okay,
I have one more question. What's your question?
Pertaining to the energy of creation, the peace and the serenity that you were
saying. Say it again, you broke up.
The energy of creation that brings peace and serenity.
All I heard is the energy of creation brings peace and serenity. It broke up after that.
Okay, let me see if... Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. It pertaining to the energy of the creation that brings peace and serenity. Is that similar to the same connection that David HaMelech had when he sang praises to Hashem and danced before him? Is there a similar connection there?
The easy answer to that is yes. Everything in this universe is connected. We don't hear it, but every entity, the blade of grass, the tree, the flower, the animals, are all singing praises to God. And that's what the Tehillim, the Psalms, are, praises to God. So you don't have to say the Ana B'Koach. You can sing Tehillim. You can say praises to God. The Kabbalah explains that by connecting to the instant of creation, which is the Ana B'Koach, it tends to be more powerful than the Psalms. But I would never tell somebody that's praying the Psalms, saying the Psalms, to stop. If you're doing it, continue. If you're not doing it, start. But also say the Ana B'Koach.
Okay.
Any, do you have a question? The question is to, there's confusion between the difference between Aramaic and Hebrew. Spanish uses English letters? Yes, it does. In case you can't hear him, I'm duplicating the answer. Yes, Spanish uses English letters. So the same written letter can be said with different ways, different accents, different pronunciation. Aramaic is a language that uses the Hebrew letters, but it's not Hebrew. In some ways, it's more powerful. The Zohar is written in Aramaic. It has a more direct connection. We have a Midrash. We have a Midrash that tells us that the angels do not understand Aramaic, but they do understand Hebrew. That whole Midrash is a metaphor. Aramaic is a more direct connection. The angels cannot interrupt any statement I make in Aramaic. So why shouldn't I hear the Torah in Aramaic? One of the things I'm supposed to do is read it in Aramaic and say it in Aramaic every week. But why don't I say it and hear it on Saturday morning? Because Aramaic, while it be is a more direct connection, it also means that my consciousness needs to be more direct, more pure, less negative. So scanning it and reading it, the Zohar, which is in Aramaic, gives me that more pure energy than if I were to do it directly in Hebrew. Does that help?
Is that the purpose?
I'm sorry?
Is there a purpose to read it in Aramaic?
Is there a purpose to read it in Aramaic? Absolutely. There's a purpose of helping to cleanse energies that the Aramaic can cleanse that the Hebrew can't. But where we're just starting out in a beginning class, stay with the Aramaic in the Zohar. Hear the Torah on Shabbat morning and say the Ana B'Koach. Those are the tools for the beginner. Don't stop doing if you're doing more. Continue what you're doing. Don't change to do this. Add this to what you're doing. Any other questions? I bid everybody good night. We will see you next week at the same time.
Yes, thank you for
Shalom.